that we are more impressed with youthfulness as a quality than an age grouping. And that therefore the stance of the Office of Youth Ministries ought to be one that is open to this quality of youthfulness wherever it may be found. This makes us sound a bit grandiose, I suppose, and leads us perhaps to involvements like Holden Village, because as you, some of you may know, the three youth offices are the ones who really are the backers of the village and, in one sense, the owners of the village. And we believe that we have such an interest because of this quality of youthfulness, which is not limited to an age group. As you would recognize, there's some, and you probably know some, there's some very, very old teenagers, and there are some very, very young senior citizens. So it's this quality of youthfulness which I think has biblical roots, perhaps and more so than an age grouping, that we would be interested in and concerned about. The second thing I'd like to say, and these will all be that simple, that's the level I work on. The second thing I want to say is that the difficulty of talking about youth ministry is that we all bring our own images of young people along with us. In contrast to perhaps other areas of discussion or even presentation here at the village, just about everybody has some pretty solid ideas about young people. And as many adults are in an audience, so many ideas are there and images of young people. I'll be generalizing because I suppose it's the only way you can talk to a larger group, but I would have in back of my mind that at least the church is aware, ought to be aware of a number of categories of young people. That's a very terrible thing to do, is to put people into categories, and I affirm that it is terrible to do. But for the means of communication, it might be useful at least to tell you that I'm aware of the fact that there are some young people related to our church that are, for whom the ministry of the church is a very meaningful experience. Very deep meaning in their lives. There are such young people, no question about it in my mind. Secondly, there are some who are thinking about and who have a relationship with the church and maybe even to the youth ministries of the church, to whom this is really nothing at all. It's a means to some other kind of an end, whatever it may be, just loneliness or to get out of the house or whatever may be. There are some, a third group, it seems to me, that are in the midst of looking for something from the church and are struggling with the church and through the church to find something decent to hang on to. I think this is another group of young people that we deal with, that we have at our fingertips. And then there are very likely another category, if you will, of young people to whom Christ and the church have no meaning at all. They're probably unconverted and are in the church. And of course, they are symbolic of those whom the church, and the Lutheran church at least, is least equipped so far to deal with, and that is the young people outside of the church. Youth ministry in the Lutheran churches has not been a means of expressing its mission by and large. There are few who are one, if you want to use that phrase, for the church or for Christ by means of the Lutheran church in the area of in the age bracket of what we call youth. I have a suspicion that we might learn a lot about the whole business of working with young people if we would sort of lay aside all of our activities for a while with our own young people and branch out and start to work almost exclusively with youth outside of the church. We might learn really what to do with youth within the church if we tried that. We haven't done that, and I confess very frankly that I know very little about youth outside of the church, the youth that are, let's say, antagonistic to the church or just who haven't had any touch with the church at all. With this kind of categories of young people, I'll be talking about each kind at times, and you can easily catch me by asking, well, what kind of young people are you talking about at the moment? I'll probably be talking about all kinds at some time during the morning. Basically, I'm talking to those with whom, about those with whom we do have contact within the church and particularly within the local congregation. That's the second point. Third point, I'd like to tell you what we think are objectives for ministering among young people. We do not see these objectives as different from the objectives of the congregation, of the church. In fact, we have slowly come to learn that we don't think that youth are really that much apart from the whole life of the congregation, and that's a very serious struggle for all of us to learn. But we think that it's possible to at least word these in a way that might focus itself towards the youthfulness that we find in this age grouping. Three objectives that we talk about. We view the role of the congregation as that of providing settings. And the three settings that we talk about are these. To provide settings, first of all, where youth can be honest. Honest with themselves, honest with God, and honest with others. And probably by far the most difficult of the three is to be honest with themselves. I suppose dogmatically we'd say this is an approach to repentance. And it seems strange that for many of our young people, the church is sometimes, the Christian congregation is sometimes the last place that they can be honest, or the last place that they expect to be honest. The whole business of faking it out, and I'm not talking only about the adults who are, in a large part, I suppose, tend to be faking it out when we are in a Christian congregation or in congregational settings, but the young people themselves, who I hold to be the finest con artists of our time, who are able to discern in advance what we're looking for and to come through with it real well. And this is why I think a lot of us are not really convinced of the dilemma of youth ministry, of young people themselves within the Christian congregation. That's why there are a lot of adults who still think that we have the same kind of kids that we had before. I don't believe this is true. I believe that some of the studies of young people are accurate when they describe it as a new kind of a generation. But they have conned us real well in many places because of the inability of the congregation frequently to provide settings where we can be honest. Now, I'm saying this that in the sense that I believe it can be done, and I think that it is being done in many places. And I think that it ought to be one of our goals, that young people ought to be really at home in the church, and at home not only with their excitement and delight and energy, but also at home with their problems and their struggles and their failures. I think the church creates for them more a mood of quasi-perfectness than it does the acceptance of people who are struggling. I'll say more about that when I just do a brief reaction to the preaching of the church as it relates to youth in a couple of minutes. So I repeat, to provide settings where young people can be honest with God, with others, and with themselves, in the sense of repentance, so that they can honestly see themselves in the light of God's Word and their own experiences. Secondly, the objective to provide settings where it can be shared in ways that youth can grasp, that God is for real, God is real, and that he comes to us in Jesus Christ. It's purposely said that it can be shared in ways that youth can grasp, because I was trying not to say that this has to be said. I think most of the time it probably will be, but I'm trying not to limit it to proclamation in the sense of words, but that this can be shared with them in the variety of human means of communication, whether it is by art or by movies or by symbols, or there is by experiences, or whatever way that the grace of God in Jesus Christ can be made clear to youth in ways that they can grasp is the task of the Christian congregation. As you see in a moment, I would include in this, obviously, the worship experience, the preaching and teaching experiences of the church, but as many more of experiences of the congregation that the congregation would be able in its imagination to create. To say this an objective to a church that is committed to the gospel of Christ seems foolish, but obviously this is the thing that is not coming through to our young people. Again, the studies of Lutheran young people that have been made this quite clear, that they don't read the Lutheran church as a church that is sharing the good news of God's love for us in Jesus Christ. They read the church more as that group that is determined to provide them with a setting of guilt and fear, rather than being freed from the very guilt and fear that their sins, their honesty with themselves, lead them to. It's strange that a church, such as Lutheran Church, which is so committed to justification by faith, God's activity in grace for us, should be read so by our young people. But I think it is a fact that this is the way they do read us. And I don't mean to say, therefore, it's all our fault, we're doing a lousy job. I think it's their fault, too, without question. They read us badly, because I think we do try to communicate it. But the end result is that we aren't communicating to them, in my opinion, Jesus Christ. And therefore, objective is to provide settings where this can be shared in ways that young people can grasp. That God is real, that he isn't part of the cultural phenomenon in which they find themselves at this time, and that he does come to us in Jesus Christ. Thirdly, to provide settings where youth can be supported in their struggles and at the same time shoved out into the world for which they were made. I have no doubt that it is more difficult to be a young person, or to be youthful, if you will, in this age than it's ever been before. If you would just say so, and I'm trying not to say a lot of that because I know in some of the other sessions you've been having there, this kind of discussion has been going on. But I think it's quite clear that the changing times focus their results often on the young, and that the hang-ups that we as adults have often take their toll more frequently and more powerfully with young people. And therefore, that it is difficult. As someone has said, that kids today probably make more moral decisions, you know, decision, choice between right and wrong, by age 16 than their grandparents made in their lives. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it's symbolic of what is going on. And therefore, I think that the church has to learn to be terribly sympathetic to the struggles of the young people, that it isn't easy to be young. It never has been, and now since we have made of them a subculture, as we have in the last perhaps 30 years, that we ought to be terribly sympathetic to that situation. So, to provide settings where they can be supported in their struggles and at the same time shoved out into the world for which they were made. Because if there has been a failure in the past in the stance of youth ministries in our church, it has been this, that it has been only self-serving. We've gained the impression that if we gathered kids together in a group in the parish, that then we had really accomplished youth ministry. And I, of course, do not believe this is so. I think it is the gathering together to equip them for their life being lived right now in the world is really the task before us. The very real life that they live, for instance, in high school, as I'll say again in a moment, high school for many of us is a blinded area, a blurred area. Most of us don't know what happens behind those walls. And therefore we are ill-equipping them, it seems to me, to live out the gospel of Jesus Christ within those walls, except in terribly vague generalities, which has led the kids to believe that Jesus Christ belongs in that building down there at the church, and he doesn't belong within the structure of the high school. We're so convinced of this that we've had a staff man for a year, and he's going to be another year, living inside of a high school with no strings attached. We just offered him to the high school district, and he's there finding out what it's like in terms of what the kids are experiencing as well as in terms of what the faculty is like, what the whole business of relationships is like behind those walls. And it's a fantastic kind of experience, mostly so for the faculty, by the way. The superintendent and the principals are just amazed. And one of the most significant things that this man is doing is helping the faculty to understand young people, which seems sort of tragic to have to say about high school teachers, but the principals would say the biggest problem we have is that most of our teachers don't have any idea of what a young person is like. And this fellow happens to be helping in that regard. So it means that the parish has to be alert to the kind of worlds that kids live in, they experience. At the same time, be sure to shove them out into those worlds because that's where they belong. And equipping them for that life within the congregation through this setting, through the settings for honesty and proclamation is the task. That was the third point. The fourth is there are a whole raft of avenues for doing this. Our tradition is that we've had a Luther League or a Walther League to do it in, and that's it. Well, that's never really been the case. There have always been a variety of approaches to young people, whether or not we've been aware of them. And I'd lead off by saying one of these avenues, and perhaps the most helpful, as far as I'm concerned, is worship. As a means for communicating with young people the gospel of Jesus Christ and their equipment as saints for their life in the world. The trouble is that we have most frequently ignored young people, or youthfulness, if you will, in our approach to worship. Youth do worship. Some of the youth I was talking about before in those categories are very faithful in worship. This is why I'm wide open to the approach of a sacramental living. Our office will be launching a two-year, at least, emphasis on this. We're doing our homework now, our biblical studies, Old and New Testament, and dogmatic studies of sacramental living. And we think that this is a very positive and possible approach to young people. As you may know, youth, in categories now again, lead the church in participation at the Lord's Supper, lead the church, very likely, in church attendance, lead the church in percentage of attendance at Bible study. Such good things are rarely said about the youth of the church, but them's the facts. And I don't think we ought to lose sight of them. This means that we do have avenues available to us, and I am suggesting that worship is one of them. And this, in my book, means the traditional forms of worship as well as the opportunities for new forms of worship that might be geared to youth as age group or to youthfulness of the whole congregation. Secondly, the avenue of the preaching of the church. I would guess that most of the preaching I hear in the church, and this is mostly Missouri Synod, but I certainly hear it in other churches too, is done as if the person who wrote it lived in a vacuum in which youth do not exist, or at least youthfulness is unknown. And this is sort of a tragic thing. And I'm not talking now about being jazzy, you know, and saying, I know how you kids feel, and I know what you did in the backseat. It's always the backseat of the car, you know. I don't know quite why. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a sensitivity and an openness to the worlds, and there are many of them, in which they live. I almost wrote a couple of things once in church, just talking about the kids in the balcony, and watched them, you know, endure some of the things that go on in what we call preaching in the church. And again, I'm not talking only about relevancy in the sense of, you know, again, mentioning places, but seeing to it that the proclamation of the gospel has the edge to it that shows them that that is for real for where they are right now. And I certainly think that's possible. Third avenue is pretty obvious, and that's the teaching ministry of the church. I would clearly hold that the basic task of the church is adult education. It is not youth work, and it sure as shooting isn't training of little children. We've been misled, in my opinion, about this. We've taken the easy route in the Lutheran church and have ended up as being lousy adult educators. I don't know of anything that the Lutheran church can be as a all three synods corporately more ashamed of as their approach to adult education. Because of that, our ministry to young people in the area of education is also very terrible, because they are at the brink of moving out of the stuff we've been doing for kids, both in Sunday school and confirmation, and moving into the area of adult education. And they're right caught in that crack. And because we are, in my opinion, not doing our best job with children and doing a very terrible job with adults, they get the dregs. It's sort of a shame that we have been so tied down to merely the Bible study on Sunday morning approach, and often also to the kinds of materials that we've been using there. I think that the opportunities that are demonstrated in many places, and some of our youth offices have materials for backing this up, as well as experiences that they can lead you to and through, to have a variety of approaches in our teaching ministry, so that it isn't held down to just the Sunday morning thing. Sunday morning could be it. In fact, we have launched a joint project with our Board for Parish Education to try and help congregations that are interested in doing that to make the Sunday morning discussion experience the focal point of the ministry within the parish for young people. And this is certainly possible. But the quality of it is what I would be talking about. We have been, this is an old line with me, we have for so long been, in youth ministry, been plagued with consecrated ignorance that we're bearing the results of it. And a youth counselor or a Bible class teacher was somebody, you know, who had a free night and a car. And that was really the basic qualification for it. Well, no longer dare this be the case. And especially in our teaching ministry, when they are exposed to the kinds of stuff that are going on elsewhere. Here's a youth high school publication done by young people, Suburban High School, Chicago. On McLuhan, most people don't even know who McLuhan is. He's the sharpest voice in the area of communication today, whether or not you buy all that he says or not, and I certainly don't. These kids, an analysis of McLuhan, even devising a game showing how McLuhan thinks about life today. And it was done by the kids at Lyons Township High School. Now, to sit down with them, you know, with some of the junk that we've been peddling in behalf of the church is really, really pretty sad. And our publishing house, if I'm going to be very specific, with Missouri Synod, won't touch anything like this because it won't sell. No? They have to have it exactly the same form and the same format as it's always been, because that's what will sell. So the struggle is very real of how to change this in the area of teaching. Kids are being exposed to more and more of this stuff and are able in this area, and we're still trying to operate as we did at least 20 or 30 years ago in our approach to teaching. Fourth, I would say the avenue of counseling, the one-to-one relationship. Beginning a week from Sunday, Dr. Sturman will be here in a youth counseling seminar, sort of a forbidding kind of a title to a very simple approach to ministry, and that is trying to help adults and lay people as well as professionals to learn how to have conversations with young people. That's really what it's all about. It takes a full week at least to get anywhere near this. I was here last year during the youth counseling seminar, and it's just fantastic of the things that have to be broken down before the adults who come can actually sit and talk with a young person. I might add that by the end of the week, the very sophisticated young people we had here last year, they're coming again this year, some of them from the same parish, who were antagonistic, you know, when they started out. You know, nobody needs to talk to me, and I don't want to hear any adult anyway, and they're all enemies. Standing in line to talk with this one fellow from Saskatchewan, who was in his 60s, you know, they wanted appointment times with him so they could talk with him. It does work. I read, I don't know if there's some kids in the audience too, which is a little uneasy for me, because they could negate anything I want to say at any moment, especially since a couple of them happen to be mine. But I read kids as being terribly open to adults, and we often read them as not being open to adults. That doesn't mean to every adult, but the gap of the generations doesn't mean at all. There isn't the possibility of relating. It's a matter of finding those ways and breaking down some of the barriers that do exist so that we can relate to each other. I see young people wanting good, honest relationships with adults, very seriously. So, and I think one-to-one conversation, rather than, if you want to call it that, then counseling is enough, is a means for doing this. Fifth, I'd say, ministry through young people and through young people by means of the family. And here I'm pretty stuck. I don't have much more to say than that. I talked with Howard Belgum about it, and the people in our church who try to specialize in the area of family life. There are many sociologists, I suppose, and psychologists who say the family is the last place that you minister or try to minister to young people. Well, I reject that quite clearly. I don't worship at the psychosocial shrine. But I don't know how it happens. I don't know how it happens. And again, as I said before, because we are so ill-equipped, I think, at least I am ill-equipped in the area of moving with adults in families, that we haven't found good ways yet to really be helpful to the ministry that does go on with young people, for good or for ill, in families. But it is a crucial dimension of the church's task. We're just beginning to find out. Another avenue is, of course, their relationship with the society in which they live. A heck of a lot of what they're doing is a peer group oriented, whether this is through music or movies, pop songs, or the athletic activities, all of the things that tend to rally them around, whether this is individual by dating or groups that they belong to, that they identify with, this is another means of ministering to young people. And I'm not saying that now to move in and organize all this, but to be aware of the kinds of growth that is going on here, and for the church to be captivating, or capitalizing, I mean, say, on these experiences themselves, rather than reading them off as outside of our province. I think these are means of ministering to them. I mentioned the school before, but I would certainly say that the high school is a means for doing it. And here I do not intimate that we ought to move into the high school to do this. I don't think that's necessarily a good way. But I think that we haven't really yet learned how to equip our Christian people who are on the staffs of high school. I think the approach to high school ministry for youth is the approach through the adult staff. I know one congregation, there are probably many like it, that has 26 high school teachers as members of the congregation. They have never once been called together. They have never once been approached by the parish in terms of ministering to them for their task in the high school. What the pastor's mad about is he can't get them to teach Sunday morning Bible class for teenagers, which I think is wrong approach. Until he begins to minister, it seems to me, minister to them in their task, he won't really begin to get the fruits of their insights and their labor and their labors. So how to help congregations minister to those who are doing the work in the high school, it seems to me, is a focal point of the church's youth ministry today. We're trying the report from this man who's been in high school for us, the public high school for us, is heading in that direction. We're going to try and see if we can help congregations minister to high school teachers. It's amazing. Well, I think it was Jerry Pelican who was up in Portland, I think I'm right on this, for one of their annual things. It's just the thing that I think that Dr. Bainton is going down for in a couple of weeks, the same kind of a session, only this was on another theme a couple of years ago, where they brought together teachers from high schools and colleges and just asked them questions, you know, about the meaning. What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be related to the church? And, you know, tragic poverty of understanding. They thought if they could get the kids to go to, you know, to pray at night or whatever it may be, all, you know, important, but failing to see their specific opportunities in that setting, they're a long way to go. And then our last avenue, of course, is youth groups, gathering young people together in a variety of ways, in where it works, in a Luther League or a Walther League, or where this doesn't work, to have other opportunities for gathering them up into interest groups, discussion groups, action groups, whatever these may be. Our thrust for the grouping of young people is towards variety in the parish, rather than assuming that you can get one gang together that will satisfy the needs of all. In small parishes, obviously it probably turns out that way. But in larger parishes, and they don't have to be too large, where you can work with smaller segments of the young people, this would be the opportunities that we would be seeking and the kinds of materials that we are providing to let that take place. As we work in groups, we try to operate with the approach of growth, exposure, and action. Simple as can be, we stole some of the words from the Roman Catholic youth movement called Young Christian Students. Very sharp operation of the Roman Catholic Church.
one of their lay apostolates. But the growth coming through their constant in touchness with the Word of God and with the sacraments, their exposure being exposed to the life that is around them, whether it is the high school or whether it is the hippies or whoever happen to be around them. For although the young people do live in the world, this doesn't mean at all that they are aware of the world or that they understand what is happening in the world. That's why movies, which probably do set the moral standards of our times, I believe they do more than any other factor, to analyze movies and to be moving into the drama, the TV, whatever else may be going on now, and helping them discern. This kind of exposure is the kind that I think the church is called to today. And finally, to action. Because of the nature of young people, I think that the church's talking and only talking is one of its failures. And learning how to be healing people, reconciling people within the congregation, within family, within the school, within the society, community in which they live, is really our essential call here also. To be healing people, healed by Jesus Christ, and to be ministers of reconciliation in our age. Oh, I just would share with you the priorities that my own office works on and might give you a feeling of what we're trying to do, and then I'll stop. So first of all, we committed ourselves, this is 2 years ago, to improve our efforts toward the renewal of traditional patterns of ministry among youth. We're quite convinced, in fact, the Walter League at one time, the Walter League Executive Board had on the floor for discussion a resolution to dissolve the Walter League because of its animosity to the ministry of the church, meaning that so many people used the existence of a league in their congregation as an excuse for ministry. If you had a society, that was all you needed, and nobody cared what went on in it. They were so convinced that this was going on that they really wanted to dissolve the whole business. They were, by better minds, convinced not to do this, but to launch a program of renewal for the traditional means of working with young people. We're committed to that. And many of the materials that we produce and the training that we carry on is to try and take what's happening, and if it isn't happening well, to try and turn it towards the renewal of the church, a renewal of young people as well, of course. So this is our first commitment. Second commitment is to get where the people are, get out of our ivory towers as we as a youth board and staff live, into the life situations and geographical areas where the people are. This is why our staff is not located in one place. We have people spotted around the country. Our national staff is not all in one office. We have one fellow who's going to be living in a rural town called Paris, Illinois. He'll be a full-fledged member of our staff. He just happens to live and work and have his being in a rural setting. Another one will very likely be spotted in New York City or San Francisco in the young adult world. He'll live and move there, not necessarily carrying out the ministries, but everything that he does, that he would do in our office, he does there in the context of where these people are. And the high school fellow I mentioned before is another expression of the same kind of desire on our part. Secondly, to move out from only producing, as I'll say in a moment, materials, to move out to be people who are moving with other people in the context of the congregation and the districts and whatever other administrative structures we have. So moving out, and oh, by the way, the commitment of our staff, therefore, to be people who are living this out. We don't want anybody on our staff who isn't in a relationship with young people in some form or another, in community, in high school, in parish, or wherever it may be. This is a commitment of the staff, too, even if they are located in our central office. Thirdly, our commitment is to change our Office of Youth Ministries image, we hope, from one of printing and packaging to people in training. We hope, and the assignment is, I'll be getting a report on this in about 2 weeks when I get back, to change our office into a training center that we will be using much of what's already going on in training efforts in the city of Chicago to let this be part of the offering that we make, that people will actually be able to come to Chicago and to work with us and live with us and get all kinds of experiences right there, year-round, rather than announcing it for 2 weeks that you might come there. We are moving in that direction. I think it's not easy, especially not popular in church circles to be this oriented. You're supposed to produce materials if you're a church office, and we're committed, our board is committed to use any extant materials. We're quite convinced really not many more materials are needed. We can use Roman Catholic or Methodist or Presbyterian, whatever might be good and useful, and certainly inter-Lutheran constantly. And the task really is to how to translate all of this into something useful for a local parish and for para-parish situations. And our fourth commitment was to find the best ways to assure administrative and financial security for our ministry. Because sometimes we are caught in doing things that aren't yet accepted in the church or aren't known in the church, we have to find ways of being also financially secure so that we can survive. That's one of the truths of life. And a good deal of my time the last 8 months has been focused in this direction. So that although the Board for Young People's Work of the Missouri Synod carries out basic ministries among youth, we're also finding funds to be very sure that other ministries, in addition, parallel ministries, supportive ministries, more daring ministries at times, also can take place and are financially secure. There are many people, for instance, in our church that would immediately resent any involvement in Holden Village, of course. Well, we're going to see to it that there are funds around that things like Holden Village can continue to happen, Holden itself as well as other kinds of ministry that are difficult to get started by an institutionalized church. With respect and love for this institution, we think there have to be parallel groups to support it. And that's what we're working on now, too, to let that happen. One of these will be, we hope, a youth-led movement in the church. We're going to turn over, my guess, about 35,000 a year to 6 or 8 young people and let them do with it as they will. And we hope that things will happen this way, too. To stir up kids themselves without adult supervision or domination, but in a relationship to adults, to see what would happen if kids really had a chance to learn or develop their own ministries among youth and among adults. We're going to try some of that too. And we need security. Church usually doesn't invest in this kind of thing, so we're going to try some of these things too. That's all I want to say. I'm sure you got comments and reactions. Don't have to be related right where I was either. Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose because of what's happened to us through the electronic media, I think that the impact of this on the whole thinking and outlook of young people has made them different in kind from those of us who didn't really have that. Estimate that, if I recall the figures, the average kid in the U.S. spends 15,000 hours in front of TV and sees more than 1,000 movies, I think by age 16 or 18. I think this has materially changed their outlook and their method of thinking and expectation. I think in addition, the whole realm of change that's been going on technologically and therefore in many other ways, I think, philosophically, in terms of morality as well, take a toll of the young person or find some of their meatiest ground in our young people. And I think that this too has brought about a different kind of a kid. I don't know if, how far you can push it. You want to push back and back and back, you'll find some basic needs and all this, but I think that the way they think and the means of responding to the previous generation is significantly, and I'd say seriously, different than the previous one, just because of the changes that are going on. That doesn't mean we need a new gospel, as far as I'm concerned, because I was very traditional in saying, in terms of repentance and incarnational preaching that, or sharing that is needed. But I think the means for getting to them is significantly different. The very fact that most of them, I heard it, you sit around in the groups here and you hear it in the side comments that are around, their basic mistrust
of any system of answers. Maybe that's always been, but I think it's more so now, I think, than ever before.
The thing that bothers me about that statement is that the same statement has been made each generation back to the time of Aristotle, and probably earlier than that.
And I have a book that does a very thorough scholarship job on that. I don't agree with everything that's in the book either, but I think it better be said in each generation. It's contention of some people that no generation has ever communicated to the next. And that may be true, I don't know. I guess what we'd be fighting here are the people who tend to say, well, I was young once, you know, or I know what you're going through. And, you know, there are elements of truth in this, but really perhaps the least helpful thing we can say is that I was there. First of all, I wasn't there, you know. That was then, this is now. Secondly, I don't remember really then, because my memory neatly screens out, you know, so much of the stuff that I ought to remember. I don't remember a whole experience. Thirdly, I'm not another person, you see. My own child certainly is not going to have anywhere near, necessarily near the same experience that I have. There are things we can learn from that, but I think there's a very serious danger, and I see it rampant in the church, especially with professionals, that they feel that what they have experienced is exactly what these young people are experiencing today. And to try and focus the fact that this is different, I'd be willing to echo Aristotle or whoever else it is that said it. This is especially true in our particular synod where many of our pastors go to prep school, you know. When I was a kid, our pastor was saying, we pastors didn't have an adolescence. We went to prep school instead. And to remember, for me to remember my adolescence, that's pretty sad. Because my prep school wasn't a very good one. Imagination of man's heart is evil from his prep school, we say. That's not a very good background for it. Well, okay, please. In back, Rudy? It's a better answer than mine. It's one that I use in a sermon that I preach on generation gap. But the kids do, in some sense, in some areas, know more than their parents. This is a fact, and one we ought to be able to work at facing up to. Now, that doesn't mean they have wisdom, you know, at all, but it certainly does mean that there are areas where they do know more. And of course, that contributes to a serious difference in kind.
I was intrigued by your point that we have a lousy adult education in our church. I would like to ask you what ideas that you have in this area as to how we can improve this.
Well, I think one thing would be to stop isolating our young people from adults and to approach education with young people and adults together. There was a time, as I said before, when we thought when we got young people together in their own group, we thought this was the ultimate form of going on a retreat or taking them out to a leadership school. This was an ultimate form of youth ministry in our youth work or youth group stuff. And I would buy that only partially, because I think the dialogue between the generations of the adults having to confront together
the difficulty of the young persons getting this information and not knowing what to do with it, and facing their creativity and their excitement and their just their sheer energy. And the young person, on the other hand, confronting the values of experience and of wisdom, as at least some adults have, and all of the qualities that we attribute to maturity. To have this happening back and forth, I think, is a form, and it's only one, of doing this. Secondly, I think that moving out in educational forms beyond just our traditional Bible studies, which have really not been very good. I guess all of us like Carol Hinderly's Bible studies. Well, they're monologues, aren't they? They're great. I think they're fantastically great monologues. And I don't know whether I'd buy that kind of a study program for my parish exclusively, you know? That's one form. I think there have to be many more forms. And I think some of the suggestions of moving into the issues of the day in the to see the relationship of the gospel to all of these issues of the day is probably one of them. I think good adult education has been going on with Paul Hain here. Some of the stuff, at least I haven't been in all of his sessions, some of that I've heard. Vern Rieke, I think, was doing this. Some of it is in form, but I think most of it's in content. I'm not very good at answering that. I hope there are more people in the church that know more about it. Herb Kent's one of them.
I wonder what a cry, especially in large parishes, where when they hire usually their second pastor or lay assistant, they put this person in charge of youth work, and if this doesn't aggravate the separation, because now the senior pastor is separated from the young people in the church, and he's here really working with the adults, and you've got a pastor or an assistant over here working with the young people. And there are several senior pastors taken back this,
sure,
to keep themselves in touch with this wide younger generation and try and help groups again.
Yeah, I think a good assistant or a good youth leader, youth director in a parish won't let it happen. He may take on that responsibility, but he'll relate them to the pastor.
So take the pastor away from really being close to the kids.
Yeah, it certainly does. All I'm saying is that I can see sometimes you have to delegate some of the responsibilities of parish, but boy, you better not delegate, you know, that relationship away. And that guy's job may be, his best job is to relate kids to the adults of the parish, including the pastor. And that's why a youth director probably spends most of his time working with adults. I suppose it's another answer, is that one of the devices is to be in the area of youth ministry so you can work with adults. Because it gives you an entree for meeting with the adults and talking with them and hopefully helping them. Yeah?
I think this is one of the weaknesses of the internship program in the church, because they always put the intern in charge of the youth. So each year they have a different fellow in charge of the youth.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of confusing, but how to get the seminaries to change this, I don't know.
Well, and the congregations as well. We in our office say, you know, God preserve us from interns and vicars. Not because we don't like them, but because they do a good job, but because of this business of turnover. It takes them 3 or 4 months to get moving with the kids. They move for 3 or 4 months, and then they're phasing out for 3 or 4 months, and the kids are in a cycle constantly. And for a group that needs some stability, you know, and some continuity to foist on them, this is pretty sad. It happens in all three synods.
I had a two-year.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a possible area of frustration for an adult. It's certainly a possible area of failure, you know, good live failure, which is, I think, healthy. And we tend to move away from it, and therefore we give it to the guy who if he fails, is going to leave anyway. and that's sort of sad. Paul?
You didn't say anything about sex.
About what?
No, is it wrong that people 16 or so, 17, are a vast degree of interest in sex?
No.
And the church, the one thing the church has to say, no matter how old it pretends to be, no matter how much it talks about situation ethics and new morality, non-legal
Certainly, I don't know how much you're saying when you say that, but I certainly agree that, and I don't think that really what they want to do is wrong. I'm not sure what they want to do all the time. But I think that we have failed them in trying to help them understand sexuality, so that we tend to say sex means intercourse or wanting to go to bed with somebody, and there are so many sexual expressions that are not only good and desirable, but necessary. And we haven't led them into the positive expressions of our sexuality, so that they end up being taken in by the culture to think that the only sex there is going to bed. And I think our positive contribution to the understanding of sexuality for young people and for the expression of it, therefore, I mean, no, not just not so you can understand it and not do it, but so that you can express yourself sexually with freedom, is our major failure, right? And I doubt that it will be done until we free some of us, of the adults, so that they can really do it, because most of our hang-up, I suppose, is our own sexual frustration that keeps us from letting this sexual expression by young people take place. I think there are limitations. I think there are mass evidences of ways in which our sexualness can be controlled and shaped as God's love, if it is an expression of love, which I would hope that it would be in a Christian, as God's love was shaped and controlled for man. I think we can shape and control our sexuality for others. And the power to do this, I think, is of the gospel. But I don't think that that's going to really mean much to them until they understand the meaning of being a sexual being and the excitement and fun and freedom there is in this. We failed here. Just beginning, as I see. The new sex series from Concordia, just coming out next month, is pretty limited in moving in that direction. I hope that the little book that I've read written will help a bit, because that is my stance within the book. Yes?
Another question regarding, let's say, in a small parish, in a small city, what experience do you have with, let's say, youth groups associating with
different denominations? Youth are ecumenical. They go to school ecumenically, most of them, I guess almost all of them, except in some few instances. They play athletic games ecumenically. They date ecumenically. Most of their families are ecumenical. In other words, you know, they got all kinds of Catholics and Methodists and everybody else in the family relating to them. And so I guess realistically we ought to say that our ministries ought to accept that fact and move with it. I think that if it's, if it falls into the pitfall of ecumenical action, that is, that it's going to be least common denominator business, and they're not really going to be any guts to it, any content to it, any shape to the ministry itself, then I think it's probably not going to be helpful, because I think they're looking for meat. But I don't think that interdenominational approach has to be without that. And so we would be encouraging this. In some areas, most areas of the Missouri Synod, we're doing this simply to say you ought to get together with other Missouri Synod congregations. And if you're really bold, you get together with the ALC, because we potentially might get together with them, and if you're tremendously bold, with the LCA. But where it's happening under good leadership already, it is happening with other groups, and very frequently with Roman Catholic groups. I think we've had more dialogue in this sense with Roman Catholics than we've had with some of the other Protestant denominations. I might say our youth offices find the same problem. We tend to relate better nationally to the Roman Catholic groups, and there are many of them within the Roman Catholic Church in youth ministry, than we do to the Protestant group, even though I have a very fine relationship with the National Council of Churches, and I suppose youth directors of most of the other Protestant denominations. We find more difficulty there than we find with the Roman Catholic, strangely. Maybe not strangely. But our openness would be there. That's why our materials, a lot of the materials we use are just direct takes from other denominations. And we're trying to encourage people to learn from one another and, wherever possible, to work with one another. This doesn't have to be giving up whatever convictions and whatever content we believe should be fed in to these ministries. Okay, last one, Dr. Payton is waiting.
Don't you feel that really the odds are stacked against this thing, and also including the population each year that slips by? You know, we've lost so many more that are youth that have not been adult, have not communicated with this youth. And is there a sense of urgency in church headquarters that this crash program that would train sufficient adults to get closer to this youth? I mean, you feel that the odds are almost stacked against you when you look at the population growth and see how many are missed each year, and after 15 or 16, basically you've lost a good possibility of communication. Early communication, I think, has a real power and value. But I hate to be so pessimistic, but you get a sense of the odds stacked against some sort of program like this.
Yeah, I get that way once in a while too. I don't think it's the only way to feel about it. The answer, first of all, no, there is no sense of urgency that I'm aware of in any of the three synods on this concern. In fact, maybe a little bit of the opposite attitude. And I'm sad about that. We had an excellent time at our convention in New York. We came through with flying colors, in contrast to a couple of years ago where we just almost got strangled. But the urgency at that time was only because we were doing something they thought was wrong. This time they were nice to us. I sense no urgency. And I don't think that either Larry Nelson or Dave Brown do either within their church bodies. It's usually fighting to stay alive and to really get the kinds of funds that are essential administratively for this. But on the other hand, I'm convinced that God doesn't need equal time, you know. Secondly, that he doesn't move only through those ministries that we set up from a national office. And that although I think that the young people, we used to say, you know, they'll fall away for a while and they'll come back. I don't believe they'll come back anymore. I think that's, you know, that's out. But I do think that God has a mess of other ways of moving in on them with his gospel at different stages. And I guess I have convictions about that. So that I don't become depressed about it, but I am really sad about the lack of taking advantage of our opportunities right now. Not only for what we would do for them to keep them from falling away, but to harness their energy and their potential to the life of the church, to the excitement, the celebration, and the mission that the church has at this time. We're missing a terrible amount here, and that bothers me as much as anything else. But I really come up with a positive stance. I hope it isn't, you know, rose-colored glasses. I guess that wraps us up. Thank you.